Why go to all the trouble of experiencing the great outdoors for yourself when you can listen to a few Northwest Outdoor experts yap about it? This is The Outdoor Line with Tom Nelson, Rob Ensley, and Joey Pyburn on 710 ESPN Seattle and the 710 ESPN Seattle app. The Outdoor Line is brought to you by Yamaha, Sportco Outdoor Emporium, Lowrance, Weldcraft, and Duckworth Boats, Roy Robinson Chevrolet, Kitsap Marina, Harbor Marine, Truck Vault, and Ray Marine Electronics.
Welcome to Hour 2 of The Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN Seattle. Joe Pyburn's right there. That's Rob Ensley. I'm Tom Nelson. Matt Nelson back in our Seattle studios. And on the phone, the author of Elk, Rifles, Cartridges, and Hunting Tactics, and Mastering Mule Deer, that and several hundred articles in Bugle Magazine, Wayne Van Zwal, kind enough to join us this morning. Good morning, Wayne.
And, morning, Wayne.
Morning.
I think I want to send these back to you. I want to autograph. I want these books autographed one of these days. I think that has to happen.
I want the buck on the front of Mastering Mule Deer.
Well, hopefully we'll find that later today, Joe. So what advice do you have for folks? It's the opener here, Wayne. Ticket sales are up here. I mean, not only in Washington, but all over the West. A lot of folks getting back into hunting here this year with all the COVID stuff going on. What do you recommend this opening morning for folks wanting to get out maybe over on the east side and tag out on a nice, big, fat mule deer?
Well, the big, fat mule deer are still out there, but they're not going to be easy to find in the upper country anyway. We have a little snow. I'm looking at it right now on the east side of the Cascades above the Okanagan drainage, which has always produced really good mule deer. The big mature bucks, they've been west-wide on a slide over the last decade or so, but there's still some out there. A friend showed me a beautiful picture of a beautiful buck he got on the high country hunt out of the Okanagan this year. One thing that, you know, many people are looking for, oh, the hot spot. Well, to kill a deer, you have to hunt where the deer are, and finding those places is increasingly difficult because so much of the ground that used to be open on the fringe of national forest is cut up and posted, and private land is just difficult to access, more so at least than in the past. I visited an area in eastern Oregon, just over the border here, where I shot my biggest mule deer with a bow, and this year, instead of the big tract of timber company land, it was divided into small blocks of privately owned ground that much of it's posted. But you do up your chances of killing a big buck on public land or easily accessible fringe country if you know what deer like to eat and where they like to hide. I'm in an unusual situation here in north central Washington because a 400,000 acre range fire just blackened our hills. Mm-hmm. And where we normally find mule deer in this open sage and bitterbrush country, those deer are concentrated now. Some of them have gone up into forest. Some are on the few spots of green orchard left. So you'll have to bear that in mind. And as most experienced deer hunters know, scouting is almost essential these days. Just going out and expecting to find an undisturbed deer just anywhere is really not what happens these days. So I guess I would look for if I were coming into new country, mule deer country this year, I'd look for good second growth. And I'm not talking about tall timber here, but shrubs and forbs, which make up most of a deer's diet. And, I'm sure you folks remember reading about the Tillamook burn in Oregon in 1933. It blackened about 250,000 acres across 14 townships. And the deer population there, and after that forest was essentially decimated, a huge economic loss. The deer numbers there doubled in 2 years and actually increased over 10 years over the first decade after that burn before the second growth actually grew out of reach of the deer. So just finding that good second growth where deer not only have good forage and reach, that means succulent young forage, not old forage. That's really important. And that same cover also provides some shelter, hiding cover and thermal cover, keeping them out of the wind. And we had wind last night about 60 miles an hour that took a lot of trees down here. So that's something to keep in mind as well.
A lot of that area over there that burned is winter ground, right? And
yeah,
the resident deer that were living there, not necessarily the migrators, those deer are going to obviously get pushed to the edges of those burns, right? So is that
That's right.
Guys should kind of focus their efforts, kind of the edge of those burns? Obviously, those deer are going to get pushed and congregated on the edges.
Yes, yeah, that means National Forest up just a little bit above the burns. And then if you can find some orchard ground or agricultural land of any kind that's still green, and some irrigated land was spared, of course, that's where deer are going to hang out. I've noticed a number of deer in my orchard. I have a very small plot here that weren't there before, and they've just come in from the black sage and bitter brush around us. One thing that a lot of hunters don't realize, too, I think, is that some of the traditionally favorite forage plants for mule deer actually become much less so with age. A bitterbrush plant, for example, and bitterbrush is very good forage, high in protein. The plants can live up to 100 years, perhaps even longer. And when once they get old and rank, the deer don't like them. They're not nutritious anymore. They need to be cut and or burned and rejuvenated by fire or trimming. So looking for young bitterbrush and young or early plant succession, that's the key to finding deer that are staying there to eat.
And we've seen other fires, you know, in the Okanagan in recent years, Wayne. And so you mentioned that progression and the regrowth after that. What is the optimum time frame in years once an area has been burnt that it starts to grow back? You mentioned, you know, some population dynamics down in that big burn earlier in or early last century. But as far as locally here, how old of a burn, or when you know an area had been burned, what is the optimum time that you would want to come back there and find that feed and cover mix that you alluded to, Wayne?
For me, in most of this country, which is I'll say shrub, high desert shrub, and the fringe of forest, that would be 2 to 5 years. That's when I would expect to see the most deer traffic in those areas. We've already seen some of these hills here. You can see a little green in the black. There's grass coming up. But, of course, early on, that grass will be pretty short. It won't offer any cover. It's just simply there to nip off. And a lot of the early grasses are annuals like cheatgrass, which doesn't have a great deal of forage value. So the forbs and the perennials that deer like will take longer to establish, as will the shrubs. But between 2 and 5 years, I'd say, given normal growing conditions, if there is such a thing as normal anymore, that would be the time to be there.
When I was probably, this goes back 10 years, we had a fire here in Washington in an area that I hunted for many years. And the second year after that fire, my cousin and I had killed some bucks in there, and they were the heaviest horned bucks we'd ever seen. And that's just that, you know, the nutrition that they're getting out of that burn. And it happened fast. And then for the next, you know, 3 or 4 years, we saw these not necessarily giant racked bucks, but just very healthy, heavy racks, which, you know, is so cool. It'll be interesting to see how this affects the herd, you know, in the next coming years. But typically, in the long term, it's going to be good for the deer.
Yes. Yes, you're right. That's a good illustration. And I think hunters who find those animals concentrated now, they won't be on those burned areas yet. I saw some racing across a piece of blackened country here the other day, but that was only because someone had disturbed them. They're going to be poking around into orchards. I've got two or three little bucks and some does just outside my office window wandering back and forth during the day because it's the only green place around.
So opening morning, no moon last night at all. Fairly chilly temperatures last night, you know, up on the ridge is probably, you know, low to mid 30s. South-facing slope first thing in the morning this morning, or are you going to go right to the north-facing slope and into the brush? Where are you going to point people here first thing in the morning on the opener, Wayne?
First thing, on a sunny, cold day, I like to be on a south-facing slope or southeast-facing slope. I've had really good luck shooting mule deer on the opener on high ridges that catch the first sunlight. Those bucks, you know, deer aren't quite like elk. They don't have the heavy coats that elk have, and they like sunshine if it's a chilly night. They don't like to stay in the shade. So those bucks like to be up even at timberline, picking forbs and small grasses out of the rocks. And some of that forage up there stays green year-round because it's fed by snow melt. Even when there's not snow that we, you know, that we register, there's a little bit in nooks and crannies up high. And those snow patches feed little rivulets that nurture these forbs and grasses that the deer like and that are very nutritious throughout the year. So early in the morning, boy, if a sunny spot high up there, we're just at the edge of timber. I think that's an ideal spot.
We're talking with noted author Wayne Van Swall, and Wayne, we've talked about general areas with regard to a progression after a burn. We've talked about slopes and kind of where to find them a little bit. You talk specifically in your book, Mastering Mule Deer, about glassing strategies and how you pick apart some cover. And you know, you make the excellent point that, hey, when you're not moving and the deer are, you've got a great advantage. When you're moving and they're not, they're going to spot you. So glassing is definitely something that every single hunter needs to sit and do. Talk to us a little bit about your approach to this vital activity that is glassing to find these deer.
No, you made a good point there. Everybody has seen a deer that's suddenly alert. Well, what does a deer do? Well, it doesn't move its head around looking, you know, as people do on television with binoculars. It stands stone still because it knows that if its head is moving, everything else in its vision is really moving. I mean, relative to the deer. And so it's still, and so it can pick up the slightest movement, and that's really what it needs at that point. And we spend way too much time moving our glasses. It's much better, in my view, to fix your binocular on it and use as steady a rest as you can on your knees or however you want to hold that glass, and pick a spot and then read it as you might a page in the book, moving your eyes very slowly without moving the glass through the field until you've covered that spot, and then move your glass to another spot next to it. And then you can pick up those small movements, a twitch of a tail or an ear, perhaps the glint of an eye that you'll miss if you're just moving the glass.
I tell you what, we could keep going on this segment for about the rest of the show. But, Wayne, we're up against a break. I appreciate you sharing your vast knowledge of these animals with us this morning.
We might have to pick Wayne up on the way through. Yeah. So we're going. You can help us out. We'll be driving right by there, Wayne. Yeah. So.
Well, I'll tell you what, you're always welcome to stop, but if you want a surefire recipe for mule deer, you'll have to look somewhere else.
Fair enough. Wayne Van Swall, thanks again for your time today, sir, and don't be surprised if we call on you again soon.
Yeah, thanks, man. Thanks a lot.
Appreciate it, Wayne. Have a great weekend, buddy.
Be happy to. Thanks for having me, and good hunting.
Thank you very much, Wayne. Appreciate it. Once again, you can find his work in Bugle Magazine and a couple excellent books, Mastering Mule Deer, which I'm sure is available online, and also Elk, Rifles, Cartridges, and Hunting Tactics. Coming up next, a critically acclaimed award-winning Northwest Outdoor Report right here on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
The Northwest Outdoor Report, also known as Redneck Sports Center, is brought to you by Truck Vault, the leader in secure vehicle storage.
Coastal guide Mike Zavadlo from Mike Z's Guide Service is reporting excellent salmon fishing in the Forks area this past week. He said there's been just enough rain to keep the flows up in the rivers over there, and the salmon have been pouring in. He's had his customers twitching jigs and casting hoochie spinners, and they've had limits of chrome silvers all week. Mike said the fishing has been excellent, and he expects it to continue through the end of the month.
Mike's going to be joining us on the next segment, too. Make sure you stay in for that. Lowland getting stocked with trout. Dave, the Trout Whisperer Johnson at Kitsap Marine in Port Orchard, was out on Kitsap Lake this week, so the fishing was outstanding for rainbow trout. Kitsap received a plant of over 1,700 rainbows in the one-pound range back in September. Johnson said the hot setup was a woolly bugger with a couple of split shot, trolled about 70 feet behind the boat. Be sure to check the WDFW website for a list of other lowland lakes receiving jumbo trout plants for the winter trout fishery.
Connor Martinez at John's Sporting Goods in Everett recommends a few spots in the North Sound for crabbing this week. Connor's heard some good reports from Picnic Point in Area 9. He recommends crabbing in 60 to 100 feet of water for the best results. In Marine Area 8-2, he likes the Clinton Ferry area as well as right in front of the jetty in Everett. Up in Marine Area 8-1, his two top picks are Elder Bay or Holmes Harbor. Connor said the weather's been too crazy this past week for many folks to get out. When the sound finally lays down, he expects to start hearing some good crabbing reports from these areas.
David Parks from Outdoor Emporium in downtown Seattle said the squid fishing has been definitely outstanding lately in Puget Sound. David said piers like Edmonds north of Seattle and Des Moines and Redondo south of Seattle have both been kicking out squid. A lot of folks have also been taking the ferry over to South Worth near Port Orchard and hitting Harper Dock or some of the piers over in Bremerton to catch their squid, which has been outstanding as well. He suggested using small Otori jigs since the squid seem to be a little on the smaller side right now. He said they have a full stock of Otori squid jigs at the store at Outdoor Emporium, as well as a full line of twitching jigs and twitching rods for all you fall salmon fishermen out there right now.
Another round of razor clam digs coming up. There's a razor clam dig underway on the Washington coast right now. Abundant razor clam populations are allowing for numerous digging opportunities around 58 miles of coastal beaches this year. The season opened yesterday and digging will continue through Wednesday, October 21st. There's opportunity to dig on all four coastal beaches, but not all of them are open every day. Be sure to check the WDFW Razor Clam Beach Map website to see what beaches are open this round of digs. The next tentative round of razor clam digs is scheduled for October 31st through November 3rd.
Brandon Polinick of Northern Idaho just won his second Bassmasters Elite event of the year on the Sante Cooper Lakes in South Carolina with a four-day total of over 72 pounds. The Rathrum, Idaho native took $100,000 home with this win. Back in early August, Brandon grabbed his first elite win of 2020 with his fourth overall elite series win of his career by taking the event on Lake Champlain. That netted him another $100,000 in prize money. The final event in the Bassmasters Elite Series is happening this weekend at Lake Chickamauga near Dayton, Tennessee.
Idaho is now offering a hunting passport. I threw a bunch of those big words in there for you, Joe.
And you wrote it, Chickamauga. It's Chickamauga.
Chickamauga.
Yeah.
Idaho is now offering a hunting passport to encourage folks to get out hunting. The passport allows any first-time hunter, resident or non-resident, age 8 or older, to try hunting for 1 year with an adult mentor without having to complete the entire hunter education course. Hunter has held a license in any other state, it disqualifies them for participating. Participating program. I'm hoping it gives hunters a chance to get out in the field hunting, and if they enjoy the sport, they can then pass a hunter education class and get out on their own.
Steelhead retention announced for the Clearwater River. Bios are predicting an above average run of steelhead back to the Clearwater in Idaho this fall. A run of about 18,000 hatchery steelhead is expected back to the Clearwater, along with another 4,000 to 5,000 B-run wild steelhead. These B-runs are typically over 31 inches and are a prized fish in the Clearwater. The wild run return in the Clearwater is coming back at about 3.5 times what fisheries managers forecast to hit the river this fall. With a robust run of hatchery steelhead hitting the river, Idaho Fish and Game opened up the Clearwater earlier this week for 2 hatchery steelhead per day.
With fall hunting seasons upon us, WDFW wants to remind people to be aware of chronic wasting disease guidelines in Washington State. Currently, there are no chronic wasting in Washington, and the department wants to keep it that way. Hunters returning from New York, West Virginia, Colorado, Wyoming, Utah, New Mexico, Wisconsin, Illinois, South Dakota, and Nebraska in the U.S., and Alberta and Saskatchewan in Canada are required to bone out all their meat before it can come into Washington. Additionally, hunters can take back finished taxidermy mounts, skulls, antlers, and teeth from these states as long as all the soft tissue is removed. Hides and capes can also enter Washington without the heads attached. WDFW is asking hunters not to bring bone-in meat or any heads with soft tissue still attached from any state known for having chronic wasting. CWD is always a fatal disease that kills deer and elk in the wild.
This Redneck Sports Center has been brought to you by the great folks at Truck Vault in Cedro Woolley. Check out your next secure vehicle storage system at truckvault.com.
So let me get this straight. Brandon Polinick won $100,000 with that Santee Cooper Lake deal, and then another $100,000 in Lake Chickamauga, right?
We're losers.
We are in a wrong business. Dude.
I know. I don't like my wife to hear this.
And his boat goes 75 miles an hour on top of it. Might, maybe possibly 80 miles an hour. Yeah. It's got a gas pedal, not a throttle. Yeah. What a stud, man.
Yeah.
Young kid.
Dude.
I wonder, I don't know if he's even 30 now. He might be early 30s. He was mid-20s when he first entered professional bass angling. And he was 2017 Angler of the Year, coming out of Northern Idaho.
Yeah.
And he's a big elk hunter, too. Loves elk hunting. We've had him on the show here a couple times. And he just loves coming home in September and calling in screaming elk. You know, that's his passion. So doing well. And the first couple of years on the trail, he slept in his truck.
Yeah.
You know, all these guys are driving these million-dollar, you know, big diesel pushers around and whatnot. And he's sleeping in the back of
his
truck.
He's probably not sleeping in his truck anymore.
No, he's doing good. No. He's a good guy.
He is. Yeah, we're going to have to reach out and have him back on the show.
Good kid.
Another good guy that we mentioned in the Northwest Outdoor Report, Mike Zavadlo, Mikey Z's guide service, has been tearing it up on the peninsula. You know, I mean, a long, dry summer, those fish, those salmon over there are just waiting for those first raindrops to hit and they flood in those peninsula rivers. And the dirty, rotten son of a gun is sending us pictures of all these. He won't stop, dude. It's killing me. It's like, how you doing?
I love it.
Stop now.
Oh, Cromer after Cromer after Cromer.
Just killing me. And fish and spinners, too. But he's got a couple other dirty tricks up his sleeve. Mike Z, joining us next from the peninsula here on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN. See ya.
Get in, sit down, hold on, and listen up. You're in the RenaissanceMarineGroup.com's Wheelhouse, brought to you by Wellcraft, Duckworth, and Northwest Boats.
Welcome to the Wheelhouse here on 710 ESPN's The Outdoor Line. That's Joey Pyburn. Rob Ensley's right there. I'm Tom Nelson. Matt Nelson back at the studio. And if you're curious about the fishing on the coast, whatever you do, do not ask Mikey Z what's going on, because he will tear your phone apart with pictures of chrome, chinook, and coho.
I'm glad we have him on the phone because he can't text us pictures
while
we're on the phone with him. So
Mike, stop sending pictures, Mike. Stop it.
How you doing, man? Are you got a fish on right now? Are you hooked up?
Yeah, you notice I haven't seen any pictures today. The water changed. That's one thing about
it. Oh, no.
Free water. Yeah, it came up overnight.
Dang. Well, that's going to pull some more fish in, but with Sam, especially silvers, it definitely goofs up the bite a little bit. Are you changing up tactics a little bit? I know you're still going to catch your fish. There's just not going to be extras to go around here today. What are you doing to change up your tactics a little bit, buddy?
Today we've been pulling some more plugs in that real soft water right on the edges, all those inside corners, because that's what those fish are going to be holding and then, you know, slide through as they come up. So we've been just kind of anchoring up and fishing like feet off the beach and, you know, and then all of a sudden you'll see one roll right on it. So they're just cruising up the edges in that nice soft water.
And what kind of plugs and what kind of reps are you putting on them, buddy?
I'm running tuna today, but I also pulled out the old K-16s. Few laying around, which I haven't used in a while, and that's what we got a nice king on this morning. I was on a 16. So
16.
Happened to me there. Yeah, I did. I pulled one out. I hardly ever use them, but today's the day.
Well, they're tough. I mean, K-15s are pretty forgiving with a wrap. You can still get those suckers to run. But you got to have a pretty dialed-in K-16, obviously a bigger plug, to get that thing to run. So how far behind the boat and what's your setup? Are you just flatlining those things in the soft water, Mike?
Yeah, flat line, because we're only fishing, you know, 3 to 4 feet on those inside corners. So I'm running on a 6,500. I'm running usually between 3 and 5 across, and I'm using 30-pound braid with a 25-pound shock tippet on the front, maximum.
Yeah, awesome. And those things are just thumping away on those plug rods, those 16s. The nice thing about a 16, it's pretty forgiving when you wrap them. You can kind of screw it up a little bit and still make them work. They're just such a big, I mean, what are they, like 9-10 inches long? They're just beastie plugs, yeah, man. I haven't ran a 16 big. In probably 30 years.
Yeah,
you know?
Got a big old bill.
I haven't either.
Thing.
Yeah. So what made you go to the 16s, buddy? What made you go that route?
Well, I was supposed to go down in the hoe last week or the week before. It was pretty dirty, so I dug out my 16s and just left them in my boat. So when we hit the river today and noticed it was pretty colored up, I said, today's the day, so I pulled them out. But as of today, as it's clearing up, we've got, 3 feet now. I've been dropping down to even 13s. So I started out with the big plug, but we've been dropping down. I see some silvers rolling on those insides, so we're dropping down to see if we can get some on the smaller plugs.
It's funny. That's how quickly some of those rivers clear up out there. You know, going from blown out to 3 foot of viz in one day. That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
now,
that's the nice thing is they're going to clear up quick, and the fishing's going to be banging.
Now, you've been just murdering the cohos out there, buddy. Twitching jigs, throwing hoochie spinners, all kinds of stuff there. What's your program on the coho drill out there, man? And when you're not running plugs, when the river's not blown, run us through a typical jig twitching scenario there.
Oh, so jig twitching, just all those, inside corners, even the dead water, those little soft pockets behind any little point, pitch it in there, hold your rod up, let it sink in there, watch your line. As soon as your belly drops and you know you're on the bottom, just twitch it 3 or 4 times, let it fall again, twitch it 3 or 4 times, and let it fall. But just fish all that really, really slow stuff.
Yeah, the froggy stuff. Are you hoochie jigs or marabou jigs out there, or both?
I use both. I still go back. If the water's taller, I still use the hoochies. But, we're doing more of the rabbit marabou stuff, this day and age. So it's I go switching back and forth. It's hard to get away from hoochie when I caught thousands of cohos on them.
Yeah, no question about it. Are you tipping those, with an 18-count sand shrimp at all, or just letting them speak for themselves?
No, over here, we'll just, put some smelly jelly on them. But most of the time, I just run them plain. It's more of an instinctive bite than it is a smell bite, especially if the water's clear. I hardly ever scent them, especially when we got water like this. They're aggressive. They'll chase it right to the boat and eat it.
Now, you're going to get salmon retention through the end of the month, or how long is this going to go, buddy, for you?
Yeah, all the way through end of November.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you got a good run coming up
here. Yeah, we can retain. Yeah, it's open all the way to the end of November. So, yeah, and the salduck is 4 cohos. And then the bogus shield is just catch and release on all wild cohos, which is all we have in there. 1 king retention there, and then the Kalawa is just 1 king retention, all cohos. So pretty much all coho wild release on the peninsula, except for the hoe. The hoe is 2.
Yeah, but I tell you what, the salduck, man, the coho fishing in there can be just, it's so fun. And the bogey, too. I've had some great days with both you and Bill in there. Just some fun times out there. And even if you can't keep them, whatever, there can be a lot of fish in there, a lot of action. Now, we're getting good reports from the Clearwater River. The dam counts have been really good on the summer run, steelhead run, coming up the Columbia, headed for the Clearwater. They just opened it up. What's your crystal ball telling you about steelhead, man? I mean, we've been working hard the last few years for our steelhead. What do you think's going to happen this winter, buddy? You seeing it going the right direction?
Yeah, I mean, the salmon we're catching are absolutely beautiful. I mean, super fat, just gorgeous fish. So we're hoping the same for the steelhead. We always cross our fingers, roll the dice, and they always seem to show up. At least the wild fish have always been good to us. So hatchie fish, the last few years have been a little slow. But hopefully this year we'll get some water and get some good numbers back.
We're talking with Mike Z, Mike Z's Guide Service. The website is MikeZ'sGuideService.com. And where are we at in the Chinook run right now, buddy? I mean, these fish, they're hanging out in the ocean all summer long waiting for those first peninsula rains to hit. Well, they're here. The water's up. And so are we past the peak of Chinook out there? Are they still coming in? What's the deal?
No, usually we get good Chinook fishing all the way to the end of October, and we still catch them even in November on the hull. But right now is the prime time for Chinook. Like yesterday, we did really well, and we caught quite a few nice chrome Chinook with sea lice all over them. So,
I noticed the pictures you were sending
right
me. And then
yeah, oh really?
Didn't
notice.
Did he send you the one with the sea lice with a long tail?
Oh
on
yeah,
it? That one actually hurt my heart, dude. Because I know. Well, I mean, the first thing when I one of those fish hits a creek, I mean, in 36 hours, those
the tail falls
the
off.
Tail falls off. Easy.
Yeah.
So that fish was just fresh in from the salt, and I got to go out last year and do that La Push bubble too in the salt water, and that was a kick in the pants. Loved that, and a lot of those fish they're catching, you know, right there. There are the same ones that you're experiencing right now. So what's the average size of the kings out there on the rivers that you're hitting right now, Mike?
Like yesterday and pretty much average, you know, 15 to 20, 24 pounds right in there. But there's been some big fish caught, you know, up in the high. The biggest one so far for me is like 35, but there's been some 40s and almost a 50, I think, caught. So there's some really nice fish showing up this year, big fish.
Those are tankers, man. You know, back when I was guiding the rivers, I used to mess around with garlic a little bit, especially the further up river you got. It seemed like the garlic scent stuff, running plugs on your reps would really kind of trigger a bright. You ever mess around with garlic at all, or any of the, you know, any of the other products, the bite enhancers, you know, when you're running plugs there, buddy?
Yeah, me and John Koenig used to put garlic all of our eggs when we're fishing the hoe. And, it can work. It can work really good. You know, so, yeah, I experiment. But, you know, you've got your go-to that I always, you know, have worked forever. You know, sardine, you know, smelly jellies I put on seems to work really well. And the tuna, too. So you just go what you've done in the past, and it always seems to work. So, you know, fish are fish, and it worked in the past, and they still eat it. Especially these fish, they're moving. You know, they're not held up like the hump fish. You don't have 100 baits going through there. You know, these fish, a lot of them haven't even seen anything yet. And so, you know, the old standard still works true.
So funny. You got a lot of experience out there, buddy. I've been out with you. And set your bobber to 2 feet and 7.5 inches. Like half inch? Yeah, get the extra half inch in there. You need that for getting out. I mean, just the time you guys have spent on those creeks is just amazing out there. I highly recommend anybody getting out there and fishing with you. It's always a great experience. Now, the reason why Joe Pyburn is so quiet, he's sitting right here next to me, is we're leaving the studio here in about 25 minutes to go deer hunting, and Joe's just been looking at his watch the whole time. All I can think about.
I'm here physically, but I'm not
He's
really
gone.
Here.
He's already in Okanagan County right now, Mike. So you know how that goes.
Yep.
So you stay out
I
there
do,
and keep
I do.
Fishing,
I
Mike.
Do.
Right on. Well, thanks for joining us, buddy. Go catch some more fish. And I'm going to turn my phone off here the rest of the day. So
especially if you get one north of 30 pounds.
Oh,
we don't want to know. Okay. All right. So ignorance is bliss. Man. We'll go hike a hill and get sweaty and not think about large Chinook. So that'll Mike Z, Mike Z's guideservice.com. We appreciate it, buddy. And keep in touch out
Thank
there.
Thank you, Mike.
Friend.
See you, buddy.
Later, Mike.
You're welcome. Anytime, guys. Thank you.
Go get them.
All right. Appreciate it. All right, coming up next, the hottest report we heard all week and the techniques you need to succeed. It's RoyRobinsonChevy.com's Really, Where, and it's next here in the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
No way.
You gotta be kidding me.
Really? Where?
It's coming back from the island of Tinny and the Lady.
Where'd you get him, man? No way. You gotta tell me. I'm not gonna tell anybody.
The ocean turned red.
Hey, man, can you tell me where you got him?
I'll never put on a life jacket again.
Welcome to RoyRobinsonChevy.com's
Really?
Where?
Where?
Where? Roy Robinson Chevrolet RV will take you anywhere. Really?
Well, you remember that 10-speed bike you had as a kid, and it's time for your 10-speed truck. Check out the brand new 10-speed Allison transmission behind that Duramax diesel. And right now, that 2020 Silverado 0% APR for an amazing 72 months at Roy Robinson Chevrolet, RoyRobinsonChevy.com.
Opening day of hunting season today, modern firearm opener for deer. Also, you waterfowl hunters will be out there. I think shooting light was 6:55 this morning. So I'm sure there's some mallards hitting the swamp already here.
Yeah.
And there could even be some mule deer or some blacktails being tagged out already. We're going to be a little late to the game here, but hopefully by this afternoon, we'll be glassing up some muleys over there on the east
side. You didn't want your deer season to end in the first 10 minutes anyway, right?
I'd be fine with that, actually. But, actually,
look,
you know
what?
It's
not the end of our deer season.
It's funny,
this is the beginning of
the
three hunts.
I
so,
know. Oh,
yeah, it'd be nice to get one knocked out real quick.
Oh, for sure.
Okay.
Under the belt.
So let's run this down a little quick. You crazy nuts hunters. All right. So you got your Washington tag, you got an Idaho tag.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We all have Montana tags this year, and you guys, and you have a Nevada tag.
No, no, I didn't draw for
you. You didn't draw Nevada.
This year. No.
Also, just four
states.
That's
only three mule deer. That's it.
Three deer.
We can do this.
Okay. Yeah, we can do this. This is doable. This is quite doable.
But for me. I don't know if I'm going to pull the trigger on just, and I usually don't do this anyway, on a legal buck.
Yeah.
Because I usually pass up quite a few legal bucks.
Well, and you already, you got a caribou.
We got a caribou in the freezer. I'm looking for a good quality buck. And Joe and I are going to work our fannies off here the next few days to try to at least put one on the ground.
Yeah.
You know? So that's kind of our program. We're going deep. We're going way back in there. But I don't know if you need to. With this weather pattern we got going on here, no moon. The deer are going to be moving today. They're going to be out and about. And we had really good weather on the east side this week. There's a little snow up high. It's been cooling off. The only thing I didn't like that I heard earlier in the show, and I didn't see this in the weather reports this week, Wayne Van Zwal talked about a 60-mile-an-hour blowover over there earlier in the week. We're going to be going up some trails, Joe and I, here later, and there's going to be blowdowns everywhere.
Yeah.
So I'm a little like, we're bringing the e-bikes, luckily, so at least we can lift them over the trees. But I was literally just sitting here envisioning all the blowdowns we're going to have to go
get
over.
Get your upper body work on.
The bike is kind of, worthless if you have to pick it up over 400 trees.
So we could be dealing with some of that stuff, but that's fine. They'll keep the rest of the guys out of there. We're the only ones dumb enough to do that stuff anyway. So.
For the opener here, you know, get to a high, I think we talked about this last week, get up to a glassing point, sit down, and let all the other hunters do the work, and you're going to see deer moving around. I mean, there's going to be a lot of guys out. Just sit in one spot, and the deer will get pushed around.
And I know it's hard to get up really early, but get out of bed at 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm not kidding.
Yeah,
get on the trail
you.
At 3. And if it takes you, whatever time it takes you to get to the top of that ridge, you get up there before everybody else. And you get up there in the dark with your headlamp, and you sit and wait. And you, I've got places where I can see public access down below.
You start seeing the trucks all driving.
Yeah, I see the headlights
coming up the hill.
I'm sitting there. I'm sitting there. I got my jet boil going. I'm a little more coffee going up on top of the ridge, and they're just drivers.
Yeah.
They drive the deer right to you. And I know it's a little bit of extra effort, but I got buddies, you know, over on the east side. They'll be up at midnight, heading for the trailhead, and they're bombing in 2, 3, 4 hours in the dark. I know it's crazy, and it is crazy, but it works.
But it only comes around. Look, it's deer season.
It's one weekend.
We get one crack at it.
A lot of the guys I hunt with aren't even done drinking at midnight. come on. There's a couple animal beers around the fire, you know, and wow, midnight's kind of early to start. In all seriousness, though, I mean, it's and that's a great strategy. And then the counter strategy to that is, I mean, a lot of guys don't want to get in the woods until shooting line, until they can see. But what you guys are talking about, that's definitely it's one of the things that we do on one of our Montana hunts is get way back in there and wait for the guys and it absolutely does work.
You got to have bird dogs, too.
Yeah, for sure.
Those guys are the bird dogs.
That is an absolute fact.
Here in Puget Sound, squidding's been fantastic. We talked about that a little bit last week and again earlier in the show. Boy, the squidding's been fantastic. So if you want to get out and get some squid for the table, now's the time to do it. All these Central and South Sound docks have been fishing really good here this last couple of weeks. Crabbing just opened up. Now, the weather's been just schizo the last couple of weeks. So, kind of been tough for folks to get out. But I think if we get settled down a little bit, we'll start seeing some crab coming out of Marine Area 8. Talked to Connor Martinez. He said Picnic Point in Area 9 has been kicking out some crab. So you might check that out. They're starting to restock all these lakes here, the lowland lakes for the winter trout fishery. Talk to the Trout Whisperer, Dave Johnson over Kitsap Marina. He's already hitting Kitsap Lake. Spencer Lake out in Mason County has been getting some cutthroat. Get on the Trout Plant website and check it out. They're starting to pop into some of these lakes around the state and drop some trout in. It's just a great time to get out. There's nobody there.
It is. And I mean, you know, you look at some of the afternoons we get around here, it's still warm enough to do a kind of a t-shirt drill in the afternoon. And those fish snap just fine with a little sunlight on the water in the afternoon. And there's nobody out there doing it.
There's
nobody. It's
a great time to get out and miss that opening day effect you get in springtime. We just had Mike Z on from the coast. Had a little water dealing with, but this week he's just been roping the cohos out there, releasing some kings.
Yeah.
Fishing has been fantastic on the coast, up and down the coast for Silver's here this last week with this rain. Also, the Skagit's been good. The Cascade's still kicking out some Silver's on the north side. Connor, again, at John Sporting Goods, thought that the Stilly might kick off a little bit now that we've got some rain. It shut off almost entirely because it didn't have any water in it.
Yeah.
But he felt like that might get going here a little bit.
The Stilly's got water now, I can promise you.
Yeah,
that, dude.
It does.
He's
yeah.
got plenty of water and plenty of color, too.
And
so.
Waterfowl here on the west side, the estuary yeah. should be good.
I agree.
We were seeing some pretty good video clips from Mike Sertic up on the Skagit Flats. Tons of tons of ducks flying around all over up there. The snow geese have been pouring in. And I've been pulling forecasts all over Alaska, BC, and Alberta, and it's cooling down big time up there. We're going to start seeing a push of northerns, I think, here pretty quick.
Well, and for all those guys who want to go fishing, great time to go do it because they're probably going to be a little bit less pressure because there's going to be a lot of guys in the woods or out hunting ducks. So get out and do some fishing while maybe it's not going to be so crowded.
So last time I had you over here to the show, I had a kind of a cold salmon belly, and I put it in front of you, and you kind of turned your nose up at it. Finally,
I turned my nose up at it.
But now, so
but you didn't eat it
because I didn't eat it whole.
Really,
yes,
but
yeah.
but he couldn't.
Like an anaconda.
He couldn't resist.
Unhinged my jaw and just put the entire carcass in my mouth.
He couldn't resist the hot salmon belly coming out of there.
Yeah, I mean, but I got a little chunk of hot salmon
we're gonna go right out and raid that smoker right now
because that
unlocks some Eastern Washington gates when you. When you bring a couple chunks of smoked salmon.
Oh, we're bringing some salmon with us.
Okay.
We are definitely unlocking a gate
good. That's
over
good.
There this afternoon.
The other program is that bacon fat backstrap, just cut in little chunks, that smoked paprika deal of yours.
Oh, yeah.
Is amazing. Yeah. The little smoked elk backstrap is really good.
You're fortunate enough to have some smoked elk backstrap.
Yeah, well.
The rest of us, we're going to, be eating venison.
Better boy.
That's
well,
fine.
Elk's venison,
Deers.
Too. No
Deers.
Question about it. You missed any of the show, jump on theoutdoorline.com, grab those podcasts, mynorthwest.com or iTunes has our full podcast. Get it on social media, Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. At the Outdoor Line, at Joe Pyburn, at Rob Ensley. For Matt Nelson back in our Seattle studios, or Joe Pyburn, Rob Ensley, I'm Tom Nelson. This has been The Outdoor Line on 710 ESPN, Seattle.